the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the Norse god of podcasts, Kyle Krause.
I am the Norse god of podcasts. I have nothing to follow that up with.
You don't need to follow it up. Once you have that title, you can just put that out there and everyone's like, ooh.
Is the Norse god of podcasts? Is there a Norse god for everything? Is that how this works?
I think it's a lot like the early pantheons. Yeah, everybody's got something.
Okay, so is there like a god of tables?
Sure.
Okay, cool. I'm just wondering.
His name is Kofi.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. I don't know how these things work, so you'll have to explain this to me as the show goes on.
Well, how have you been, my godly friend?
I am godly tired.
But that's okay. Go to the Kyle sweep.
That's okay. We'll ignore that. For this episode, I will not be tired. I will not be seduced by the god of sleepiness. But it's okay.
Ah, yes, the mighty NyQuil.
Yes. That is a thing, I guess. How have you been?
Oh, busy. I've got a big trip coming up. I'm going to be doing a show in Greensboro on the 17th, 18th, and 19th, if I've got my dates right. Go to bumbleking.com if you want to check out all the details on that. And I've got a ton of projects that are all kind of coming together, but I also have to be ready to travel. So, you know, it's like, I need this to be approved so I can get it done ahead of time. Okay. But at the same time, all these people, they are at the whims of their licensors. So, you know, they're kind of stuck too. And it's interesting.
It's that time of year where everything just kind of clashes into each other. And it's like, oh, I guess I have all these things to do now.
Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get more nuts as the year finishes up.
Exactly. Speaking of nuts, things going nuts, let's give away a prize.
I like that. Should that be for the Bumble Raffle?
Yes. Do that. Bumble Raffle time.
Alrighty. So the Bumble Raffle is a contest we have every show where someone is randomly selected to receive a surprise gift. Patrons of the show over at patreon.com/bumblecast get automatically entered into every single drawing. Everyone else needs to write in for each individual episode if they want to get a chance. Everyone's got the same chances. It's just that the patrons get the perk of being entered in every single time. So this show's winner is...
A.E. Double.
Not double A.E., A.E. Double.
A.E. Double.
Thank you so much for your patronage and for listening to the show, and we will get in contact with you ASAP. If the show comes and goes and we haven't, please yell at us. We kind of get distracted because we're busy guys, but you need your prize. You deserve your prize.
Yeah, let us know. Hit us up at the email, and we'll get on that.
So as busy as we are, we did take some time out of our day to go see the latest addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok. That is its theme song now, because I deem it as such.
And we're going to talk about it on the show because, hey, it's topical, and we are going to be spoilerific.
Yes.
So if you have not seen the movie yet, go ahead and jump to the Q&A, or go watch it and then come back to the show, because, I don't know, there's so much that goes on in this movie, I don't think we can talk about it without spoiling it.
It's true. It's very true. And also, just to give a high-level overview, definitely go see it.
Oh, yeah. It's the best of the Thor movies by far.
Yeah, of course.
And it's one of the better Marvel movies.
Indeed. I would agree with that, too.
So, that's the last warning. Spoilers ahoy. Kyle, what you think? Aside from, yeah, it's good. We already covered that.
It's Thor Guardians, kind of. That's my thoughts. My thoughts were like, okay, so this is Thor with the tone of Guardians of the Galaxy. Got it. It's perfect.
And see, I've got nitpicks with the film, and that's one of them, in that it works. It definitely works.
It does, yeah.
Because the other two didn't totally. But it doesn't really feel like a Thor film. It feels like a Guardians of the Galaxy film, just with a different cast, if that makes any sense.
It kind of does, yeah. Thor is... I feel like his character has changed. I don't know if it... Did it change before this movie, or... I guess maybe kind of, but not really. I can't tell. I can't remember.
Definitely was snarkier and...
Yeah.
More playful in this than in previous incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also when they were trying to push the kind of serious Norse realm thing, and it really wasn't sticking.
Exactly, yeah.
And part of the charm was him being so highfalutin, and then he would be taken down a peg. And this entire movie is basically take Thor down all the pegs.
Yeah, very true. They really pushed the comedy on this one, which I definitely enjoyed. I had some good laughs, but it's kind of strange when we do have a world where Guardians of the Galaxy exists, and that's the tone they pushed. That's the tone they're pushing for those movies. So
mm-hmm.
I don't really know exactly what the thinking was there exactly, but I mean, not to say I didn't enjoy it, but
well, I mean, Thor 1. Had its issues, but I thought it was kind of charming in a way.
Yeah.
That one was directed by Kenneth Branagh, who's famous for bringing a modern touch to a lot of Shakespearean plays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Thor 1 as a Shakespearean era story, it kind of hits all the tropes. You've got the star-crossed lovers, you've got the goofy side characters, you have this huge character turnaround in the course of a weekend. It feels very Shakespearean in that light-hearted dramedy sort of way.
Sure.
It doesn't, you know, necessarily make for the most solid of Marvel films, but I thought it was kind of fun if you don't take it too seriously.
Right, and it's a pretty, it's early on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They hadn't really, codified what a Marvel movie was at that time. So they're still kind of experimenting a little bit. So it works. It works fine.
Thor 2, I felt like they couldn't decide whether this was the serious Thor film or the goofy Thor film. Because you had some very, very dark, dramatic moments immediately punctuated with some really goofy slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
And it also felt like when they went back and they added more Loki scenes, because everyone loves Tom Hiddleston because he's freaking amazing, especially as Loki, it kind of lost the point of the film. It was the Loki movie with plot going around. And I don't know. I just didn't think it was a very cohesive story.
Mm-hmm.
Thor 3 definitely knew what story it was trying to tell.
Yeah.
And considering all the stuff it covers, I think it did a very good job of covering it all while maintaining a good pace and maintaining its theme.
It's surprisingly dense.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in just terms of, you know, Thor being dense because he's Thor. I mean, it's actually, you know, a pretty beefy movie. There's a lot going on there.
So you've got the retcon of Asgardian history to set up the motivation for the main villain and her conflict with our hero. You've got resolving all the plot points left over from Thor 2 and Age of Ultron. You've got Thor Ragnarok, I mean Ragnarok itself, which is kind of part of the title. You've got everything on Sakaar. You've got Hulk subplot. You've got the introduction and character arc for Valkyrie. You've got the introduction and character arc for Scourge. And you got to do it all within, what was it, like 2 hours, 2.5?
It's about 2.5 hours, yeah.
It didn't feel like 2.5, though. It moved. It moved very nicely.
It's a very breezy watch. Now, yeah. You're not going to understand what's going on if you've never seen any of the other Marvel movies. So,
right.
But that's okay. I think that's okay.
I think what I liked best about it is what I've liked about Spider-Man Homecoming and, shoot, I can't think of what the other one was off the top of my head. Oh, the Guardians of the Galaxy films, or Guardians of the Galaxy 2 specifically, is that the cinematic universe has gotten so far at this point. They don't necessarily have to do movies that continue the pace towards Infinity War. They can tell fun stories about the characters. the setup is done. You can play with their worlds now. And these are nice episodic events.
Yeah, they're very, they feel like self-contained arcs, if you're thinking in comic book terms. Self-contained arcs that build up to a bigger story, that lead into a bigger story. But they have just little hints of that bigger story. They're not directly related to it. So I thought that was actually really cool and really nice way to explore Thor's story and more of the Asgardian world without, you know, getting bogged down in the overall narrative of the MCU. So I thought that was nice.
I also liked how elegantly and playfully they paved over some of the lingering questions. Like at the end of, I forget which film it was now, but the stinger at the end is Thanos picks up the Infinity Gauntlet saying, "I'll get the gems myself." And everyone's going, "Well, we saw the Infinity Gauntlet in Odin's treasure vault. How does that make any sense? Is it a second Infinity Gauntlet? What's going on?" And then when Hela is, you know, vamping through the vault and she goes by the Infinity Gauntlet there and she just knocks it over going, "Fake,
fake." Bonk.
It's like, there you go. Resolved.
I really liked Hela. I don't know what it is, but it's like,
oh, she was fantastic.
She's one of the stronger villains of character-wise of Marvel movies in a while. And really, her only motivation is just to be evil, just because that's what she is. Really, except, well, she's obviously, you know, coming back to get vengeance on her father and her family and everyone else who ostracized her. But mostly, it's just she just wants to be evil. That's just how she is, and it actually works pretty well. So I really liked her a lot.
I also like the fact that she got down and dirty with the fighting. Like, she wasn't some floaty, mystical thing. She was punching. She was kicking. She was flinging them knives. She got in there, and she killed, and she got dirty, and I like it.
My first thought when she was, like, going to town on, after her big speech, was going to town on all the soldiers, was like, oh, okay, so it's Dynasty Warriors now. I get it. I'd love to see like a Marvel Dynasty Warriors game. That'd be fun.
That'd be interesting.
Yes, that would be cool. But yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like, wow, this really is just like, okay, this is a Dynasty Warriors fight. I can get into this.
I do hate that the Warriors 3 went down like chumps.
Yeah, that does suck.
I mean, at least the one guy managed to hang on for a fight scene, and I guess it kind of establishes that Hela is hella strong because she's able to wipe them all out. But I liked Volstagg. I liked the camaraderie between, you know, Thor and his best buddies. And I understand that it wouldn't necessarily work in the film because they have to do a lot.
Right.
But they just chunk dead by.
Yeah. Can we talk about Hulk for a second, by the way?
Oh, absolutely.
Hulk is delightful. Whether he's Bruce or Hulk, he was great. Oh man, they make Hulk act like a kid, like a child, and it's it's glorious. It's hilarious. It's like, okay, he really is just a big baby.
Hulk like real fire, like raging fire. Thor like smoldering fire.
I like when he's like, no, because he really is 2 years old.
Or in the big finale when Thor goes, okay, so everything's under control. We just let Surtur destroy Asgard. That will rob Hela of her power. All we got to do is let him do his thing. And then you just see Hulk go flying over it. No,
Banner, you idiot.
Who wants your life? Don't smash to a big monster.
Don't smash.
Hulk's inclusion was just fantastic. Now, if you are a fan of the Planet Hulk storyline, which is completely understandable because it's one of the best Hulk stories out there and one of the best Marvel stories out there, if you're looking for that to be adapted into this, you're going to be sorely disappointed, because it is nothing like Planet Hulk.
There really isn't much in terms of Hulk. He just kind of is there.
I mean, Planet Sakaar is not the one from the comic when you get down to it. The only one of the Warbound is Korg, and he's not the same character. He's delightful in the movie. He's absolutely charming.
I love Korg. It's great, but yeah.
He's not his comic book counterpart.
No.
And Thor's involvement with it all is nothing like the comic. So if you are going in expecting a cinematic version of Planet Hulk, which would be glorious, think Gladiator, but with Hulk.
Yeah.
That would have been phenomenal, but that's not it. It's not happening. So go ahead and temper your expectations right there.
Yeah, well, there's always... They almost never, like, truly fully adapt any of the comics at this point, so...
No. It's usually for the best.
Right. There's really no need to directly adapt the comics specifically, so I think that's fine.
It's just, for me, Planet Hulk is one of those stories that was so standout, so solid on its own, that I would love to see it get a big budget visual version.
It would be cool.
And, you know, folks, going in might be disappointed, so just temper your expectation there. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I really like the visual disparity between Sakaar and Asgardia. One very tech-based and one very magic-based. I think that makes kind of some sense between the differences between the planets or realms, whatever,
right,
in the MCU. So that's pretty cool.
I do wonder where Sakaar falls within the nine realms. I would imagine somewhere in Midgard, but who knows? Yeah.
I just like techie. I just like the techie city stuff, so I'm cool with that.
Speaking of the nine realms stuff, I am a fanboy of the Ragnarok myth anyway. Not perhaps the most scholarly versed, but enough to get the nods here and there. And I freaking adore how they rendered Niflheim and especially Surtur. Surtur in the Ragnarok legend is the king of the fire giants, who is prophesied to light Yggdrasil, the world tree, on fire with his sword that burns brighter than 100 suns.
Mm-hmm.
That's as metal as you get.
Yes. Truly is very metal.
And, you know, he looked like Skeletor and the Balrog got fused together in the perfect villain. It's just, he looked fantastic.
I also like the plot of actually Ragnarok is supposed to be a good thing, kinda. They kinda turned it on its head.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so Ragnarok isn't supposed to, or it is supposed to destroy Asgardia, but it's supposed to defeat the ultimate evil returning. It's not supposed to be stopped. You're supposed to actually start it. You're supposed to actually do it.
I was wondering how they were going to do the whole death of all the gods thing and make it a positive spin, and they did it. I like it.
I was really surprised by that. I'm like, oh, okay, so Ragnarok's actually something that's supposed to happen, and they wanted it to happen. Eventually they figured it out,
but it's, and like, they hit on most of the awesome super beasts that show up.
Yes.
We had Nidhogg, the rocket powered dragon, at the opening.
Mm-hmm.
With his delightfully horrible death.
Oh, yeah.
That eyeball roll is hilarious.
Oh,
it's
geez.
Sick of me, but that's funny.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's gross, but it is awesome. And it's, I don't know, this, they leaned really hard into the comedy on this one. The tone is very nonchalant for being, for having a lot of, like, fighting and war and serious stuff going on, or at least you think it was serious, but it's like, I don't know, I still really like it, even, I don't know, because of that or in spite of it, I can't decide.
It's a very nice blending of tones.
Yeah, it's very surprisingly well done in that regard.
And we had Hulk fight Fenrir, who is the single most powerful evil force in the Ragnarok myth. It's a giant wolf. He fights Hulk. It's cool. In the original myth, he eats Odin, but that's okay because Odin already turned into pixie dust, so whatever.
And he throws a giant wolf around, so that's fun.
We didn't have Jormungand show up, but that's fine because he would have eaten and killed Thor, and that really wouldn't have fit in the movie. Mm-hmm. Although, I wonder if they made a call out to that, a kind of morbid nod and wink in the scene where they're in Valkyrie's apartment and Loki's tied up. Mm-hmm. And Thor's telling the story about how Loki turned into a snake once. And I love snakes, so I went to pick up the snake to see how beautiful it was. And it's like, it's funny because Thor dies to a snake in the mythology. That's got to be it. That's got to be the joke.
And then he's like, and then he turns back into Loki and he's like, it's really me. And then he stabs me. And it's like, since then I made it. The way he tells that story is just like... completely silly.
And I loved the moment, especially when they're in the elevator, Thor and Loki.
Oh.
And they come to their understanding. Now, I'm not talking about get help.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still funny, yes. But
oh, it's hilarious. But, I mean, the moment before where they have their kind of resolution.
They do, yeah.
And Thor says, you know, we'll finally go our separate ways, just like you've always wanted. And the way... you see Loki fight down every different conflicting emotion without a word is heartbreaking.
Mm.
And I love it because you have that depth and breadth of the character. You make him complex. And then you do get help.
Yeah. And then you have him betray Thor yet again. But then he comes back and saves the day in his big damn hero style. And it's like, well, okay, what side are you freaking on? Are you just like on your own side? Okay, yeah, I know. It's typical Loki, but man, it's really difficult to pin down what that guy's going to do next. And that's probably what makes him such a great character.
That's why he's the god of chaos and mischief.
Exactly.
Speaking of nuanced characterization, Scourge was not given a ton of time. And you still got a huge amount of character out of him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really glad he got his redemption at the end. I was happy about that.
I'm going to nitpick that only in that I wish his turnaround came sooner.
I would agree with that, too. Yeah, it seems like they were really dragging that out.
I mean, he famously is known for... coming around at the end and making his last stand on the bridge. And they did that almost like a perfect panel for panel shot at one point. But I feel like it should have come a little sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And it bugged the crap out of me that he did his dramatic hello scream. Just have her notice that he's turned on her and shank him. But that's nitpicky stuff when you get down to it.
Sure.
He had the moment. He had his dramatic defeat. You know, they hit on the right points. I just wish it would have done a little bit differently because I'm a super nerd.
Is the names for his machine guns are pretty awesome, though. I call this one Dez and this one Troy. You put them together and they make Destroy.
From the strange realm of Texas.
Yes. Texars. Maybe that's what it was. It's hard to tell with the accent.
Really liked Valkyrie. She was a lot of fun.
Yes. She was pretty good.
I want her spaceship.
Oh, yeah. Her ship is really cool. I do like that. I like the ship designs in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're really neat. It's very colorful. It's like, wow, it's not just like dark gray, black. Sort of weirdly non-colorful. It's like, wow, it's a very colorful techie city. I like it.
I also like the fact that they found the right balance too, because there's a lot of very eye-popping big set pieces, lots of CG, but at no point does it feel like it's sensory overload like, say, the Star Wars prequels, where everything is the same shade of glitzy, shiny color. Look at all this at once.
Uh-huh.
You know, when they're having the big chase sequence through the city, you can clearly see what spaceships are what, where they're going. And it's in the same bright setting, but you don't feel overwhelmed. You know where to look as a viewer. You're unconsciously immediately drawn to where the action is. And I like that.
Yeah, it's really good. I also did quite enjoy the Grandmaster.
Yeah.
It's very, 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 very entertaining.
Jeff Goldblum as himself.
Pretty much, yes. That's really all you need. I feel like the end, the very end after the credits with him, the end stinger, that feels like it was like, that doesn't feel written. That feels improvised.
It very well could be, and if it was, more power to him, because that was brilliant.
It feels very improvised. Like, that's just something Goldblum would just do. I don't know.
Now, prediction time.
Go ahead.
Because in some continuities, he is the brother of the Collector, which we saw in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He also appeared before. Was it in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes.
Okay.
The Collector first appeared at the end of Thor 2.
Yes.
When Volstagg and Sif hand over the red Infinity Stone.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up again in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, where you see the purple Infinity Stone, and then things go bad, and the Guardians run off with it.
Right.
But as far as I know, he still has the red one. So what I'm predicting here is that when we get to the Infinity War movie, we're going to have this hilarious scene with Goldblum and the Collector hanging out at the Collector's place, with Goldblum saying, "Thanks for letting me, bum on your couch, brother." And Collector's like, "Yeah, when are you leaving again?" And then Thanos kicks the door in, brutalizes them, and takes the red Infinity Stone.
You might not be that far off.
It seems like the perfect setup.
It does. It really does. There is one thing I'm really disappointed by, and I'm very, very sad. Where the hell is Sif?
Yeah.
I know she couldn't be in this movie, Jamie Alexander. Scheduling conflicts prevented her from being in this movie, but it's like, I love Sif. Sif is my favorite of the Thor characters, and it was really sad she was not here. Like, they didn't even acknowledge her or mention her at all, I don't think.
Nope, she was completely overlooked, and I think that was more to not call to the fact that, oh, hey, she's not here.
Yeah.
In Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., she went to Earth to capture another rogue Asgardian named Lorelei.
Yes, I've seen that. She's been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple times.
So maybe she's still out running missions?
Yeah, that's...
For 2 years?
Sure. Maybe. Or maybe she just, like, got sent away before everything went down. Heimdall was like, oh, some crap's about to go down, and just shoved her out the door.
Maybe.
Who knows?
He says, I'll take care of things on Asgard. You go find help, maybe?
Yeah.
Because Thor was out gallivanting around. Maybe he sent her to find Thor.
Something like that. Who knows? Sure.
I'm sure they'll find some way to cover it, because she's got to come back.
If she's not in Infinity War, I'm going to, have a cry. A very big cry. Or, well, maybe not, but you know what I mean. I'm going to be very sad.
I also thought it was a nice, elegant way of how they wrote Thor gaining his crazy superpowers for the final fight, and we don't have to worry about them getting in the way or overstaging everything in Infinity War, because at some point they say that his powers are like Hela's, that they're tied to Asgard.
Sure.
Now that Asgard's gone boom, he shouldn't be God mode anymore.
Well, darn. Makes a good point. But what about his hammer? What's it going to do without his hammer?
I don't know.
He needs a hammer. So what's Thor without his hammer? I guess he's the unworthy Thor, as they call him in the comics. But they never established him as being unworthy now, so I don't know.
I mean, he's king. That's got to be worthy-ish.
Exactly, yeah. But obviously his hammer's kind of in pieces and... probably now completely gone, so...
Then again, after all this effort to save his people, they got bum-rushed by Thanos' ship in the first stinger.
Exactly, yeah.
So maybe losing all of his people right there makes him unworthy? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going. it's like, hi Thanos, what's up?
Ding dong, Thanos calling.
Yes, I'm here now. Are you dead? You will be.
It's just, now that things are set up, I really want them to get to Infinity War because I want to see the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the next one up is Black Panther, and that one's going to be self-contained, and I want to enjoy that one by itself, you know? So it's like, give it all at once. I need it. Give it to me.
It looks good. Black Panther, by the way, I saw, we managed to get into the theater in time just to see the preview for that. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very good stuff. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to The Punisher coming up here in a couple weeks.
Is that finally going to get released?
Yeah, that's coming out not long after this goes out. Yeah, I think. Yeah. Yes, indeed. It's coming up. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. His character setup was really good in Daredevil Season 2. So looking forward to seeing what they do with him and making him more part of the Defenders universe. But I am sad that they're probably not going to have any of the Defenders in the Infinity War, involved in the Infinity War. I know they're street-level heroes, but they could have at least, like, you know, a couple of scenes of them doing some street-level things.
Sure, sure. In the comic version, at the beginning, when things really start to ramp up, you see Black Widow and a few of the other street-level heroes reacting to the crisis.
Right.
As Thanos' will starts to go out. Now, obviously, they're not going to follow it shot for shot as the comic. But I figure if you could follow some of similar beats, start slow, build big, I don't know.
Yeah, that would be nice, but I don't know. All the reports are saying it's like, yeah, they won't be in it. They won't be involved at all. And it's like, oh, man.
Maybe that's to throw us off?
Maybe it's a misdirection. And it's like, oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. won't be involved either. But it's like, well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are in space now. So what are they going to do? What are they doing there? Why are they in space?
I mean, they've misdirected before. Like the trailers for Thor. When he's jumping around and sparking lightning, he's got two eyes. But by the time you get to that point in the movie, he's only got the one.
Right.
So they obviously did multiple shots of that. And there was a trailer that they showed exclusively at San Diego Comic-Con, which, of course, was filmed on a phone and leaked.
Of course.
But in that, and I warned everybody, there's spoilers in this episode. In the trailer, he's found by the Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's got both eyes. So we know right there that they shot something differently, just for the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if they'll update it when they actually put out the public version of the trailer. So maybe they're throwing us all off the scent?
Maybe. I guess we'll see, because I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, though. I'm really looking forward to it. And
are there any other Marvel movies coming out before the Infinity War hits?
Because
when is Ant-Man and Wasp supposed to go?
I think that comes out before Infinity War 2, so...
Okay.
Infinity War is, like, the last... Or, no, it's not the last. It is... There's still, like, three after it, I think. Let's see. Captain Marvel, we're getting... But that Captain Marvel out. Is after... Okay. Black Panther and then Infinity War. Okay.
All right, so, wow.
They moved up Infinity War, I guess.
Well, because they're going to do that one and then Infinity Part 2, or whatever they're calling it, the year after.
Avengers 4?
So... Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the end of, what are we on, Phase 3, Phase 4?
Phase 3, yeah.
Okay. And then who knows what's going to happen after that.
Yeah, they've shuffled the scheduling around, because I think Captain Marvel was supposed to be before Infinity War, but... Or there was supposed to be two parts to Infinity War, but they've changed that and something else. I don't know. So, Infinity War... For some reason, I keep thinking Infinity War is the, like, the ultimate... movie, the one that brings everybody together, but I guess not.
Well, it is. It's just they've made it a two-part movie.
Well, no. They Nick's been making that a two-part movie, and they've just made Avengers Infinity War one movie, and then Avengers 4 is something else.
I'm pretty sure it's still supposed to be directly linked to the Infinity War movie. They just changed the title to not make it a part one, part two, but make them distinctive films. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I don't know if they're going to introduce, introduce Captain Marvel in Infinity War, or if they're actually going to just keep her set up in her own movie, or what?
I would question the intelligence of introducing a brand new character in a movie that's going to have, like, a cast of 70.
Well, I know, but have her show up for, like, a brief moment toward the end or something. Or something to set her up that she's exists in this universe, because at this point she doesn't. We've never seen her before.
Right.
So, but I don't know.
And we've got the Adam Warlock tease from the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and he's kind of a big deal in the Infinity War story, but he hasn't technically been introduced.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting into the weeds here. Let's move on.
We really are.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Let's move on before we get too deep in this.
Now, we don't have any ads scheduled for this episode, but if you would like to use the Bumblecast to advertise pretty much anything, head over to patreon.com/bumblecast and buy yourself a ad slot, and it would go right here in the show.
Ooh, you could buy ads. We'll talk about your stuff all the live long day.
And with our steadily growing number of YouTube subscribers, your message will actually get heard by a fair number of people.
Indeed. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into some Q&A then, shall we, Ian?
Yes. But first, we got to do the priority Q&A. The fine folks over at patreon.com/bumblecast who have bought their way to the front of the line.
Indeed. But if you have other questions that you want to ask that are burning a hole in your brain, you can head on over to your email client and type in bumblecast@yahoo.com. Or on Twitter, you can @IanFlynnBKC or @KyleJCRB and use the hashtag bumblecast to let us know what your question is. Or, of course, you can just leave it on the Patreon and we'll see it there.
Or put it in the comments over in the YouTube video.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we can do that now, too. All right. So, first, priority Q&A from Patreon comes from none other than Sam Cybercat.
Howdy, Sam.
How does it feel to have the Sonic Forces comics translated into Japanese and put on a Sonic channel?
Super freaking good.
That's pretty cool.
The project itself was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited to do that. But to see it go international is just thrilling. I wish I was able to understand Japanese, because I would love to see how it was localized and how it was changed. I've been told that Japanese Vector is far more foul-mouthed than the English version. And I don't know if that's foul-mouthed as we think of it in English, or if it's more rough-spoken in Japanese. I don't know. You know, what's the different language and cultural differences?
Yeah.
I wish I was multilingual so I could better appreciate it, but just the idea of it going out there is really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in seeing, in knowing how they translated your words, localized your words, I should say. How things got localized there. So that's really cool, though. Next question comes from Chris A. Who's your favorite Saints Row character?
Oh, it's been a while, but it's hard to pick. I'm sorely tempted to say the main character with the Cockney accent. Because, I mean, it's the same lines no matter whose voice you put to it.
Pretty much.
Something about making them Cockney just makes it more entertaining.
You mean you don't like Nolan North, protagonist? I like how he just transcends gender, and it's just no matter what gender you are, you can select Nolan North as your voice. It's great.
I like Saints Row 2 Shondi.
Yeah, I like Saints Row 2 Shondi much better than later incarnations of her.
I like, I can't remember the names out of Saints Row 3, the luchador that Hulk Hogan voiced.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Because it's a luchador voiced by Hulk Hogan.
That is very entertaining. But yeah, I don't remember his name either.
And then the guy who has the vocoder that makes him sound like he's speaking in dubstep or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He was entertaining. I would usually have him with my crew just so I could hear his chatter in the background.
Yeah.
But it's been so long since I played through, it's hard to really say.
I love Kinsey.
Kinsey, yes, Kinsey was fun.
Kinsey is very fun. I really like her just overall, and I'm glad she's one of the playable characters in Gat Out of Hell, which Johnny Gat, also another very fun character.
I could take him or leave him.
There's a reason why he comes back, but you know, he's entertaining. But I do like Kinsey a lot. All right, and our last of the priority Q&A questions comes from Mike B.
Since Mike threw a paragraph at us, let's just go with the question itself.
That's what I planned on.
Excellent. See, this is why you do what you do.
I know. He also was very kind and actually bolded the question himself, so I think he knows what's going on. He's been here for a while. How would you feel about having a Sonic character advice column or blog?
That would be fun. I don't foresee it happening again anytime soon.
Because you used to have one, right? It was
I did one as a kind of thought exercise thing on the old Bumble King forums, but that was kind of under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during a simpler time before things got complicated. So with the new comic coming out with IDW and the new relationship with Sega, I would not be comfortable just throwing that kind of thing out there on a whim anymore. I'm older now, wiser, more paranoid.
Mostly paranoid.
Mostly paranoid. If I got the green light to do such a thing, that would be super fun. But I think there's too many official hoops to jump through for it to be reasonable at this point.
Mm. All right. Well, let's hop over into the standard Q&A from the general public. This one comes from @TheRealFTA. It says, "Dear Bumblecast, who is The Last Jedi? Also, how far along in production is the new book? Any full scripts written, or just outlines, ideas, or TMNT crossovers scribbled on a napkin?"
Okay, that's like multiple questions, dude. Come on.
Well, who is The Last Jedi?
Me.
Okay.
That's why you haven't seen The Force used too much. I've been super busy.
Well, I'm The Last Sith, so works out.
Oh, so that's where you've been.
Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I guess we can have the climactic battle for the fate of the Force on Bumblecast episode 100?
Sure.
All right, cool. So that's the balance of the Force figured out. Let's see. Production of the new book. Which new book? Have you been to my website? Do you see how many things I'm working on?
I'm assuming he means Sonic because he mentioned TMNT crossovers, so I'm thinking IDW. So he's...
I know that's what he means. I'm just being difficult.
I know. Okay.
It's moving, but I'm not going to say where it is because professionalism. But we're working on it, and I'm super excited, and... Oh, man, the things we got planned for it. It's going to be nuts.
Gotta have some...
And as for a TMNT crossover, there is absolutely nothing on the table with that just yet. I do, however, of course, have plans because I plan for everything. I mean, come on. There was no way that I thought a Sonic Mega Man crossover would ever happen. But I wrote up the idea anyway because I'm a huge nerd. And it happened. So, you know, lightning might... hit twice.
Sure. Why not a Ghostbusters crossover while we're at it? Or a, I don't know, My Little Pony crossover? Or
My Little Pony a lot easier than Ghostbusters?
Yeah, actually, but... yeah.
Well, no, now that I say that, Ghostbusters
if you could work.
Boom Boo, maybe to call. Yeah, alright, never mind, it could work.
Ghostbusters can work. Yeah, they can all work, dude. Transformers, you could make it work.
Well, Transformers is easy peasy.
I know. Transformers, a Transformers crossover would be fun.
I'm just saying some work some lend themselves easier than others.
Sure, sure, but you can make them all work.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. What other books does IDW have that I can't think of right now?
They got a huge line of Hasbro stuff. They've linked up G.I. Joe and Mask and Transformers all into one collective universe.
G.I. Joe, you can do a G.I. Joe crossover.
That one I'm not immediately seeing how to thread it together, but you know, if it fell on my table, then I'd figure it out.
Of course.
Although I guess Cobra Commander operating across from Eggman would be interesting.
Cobra Commander and Eggman in the same room together would be pretty amazing.
It happened to open the window so there'd be enough room for the ego, but...
Yeah, yeah, yes. All right, next question comes from Asparagus Edu. Have you ever played Animal Crossing? If so, what are your experiences with it?
I believe I've played every incarnation of Animal Crossing at some point or another.
That makes you the polar opposite of me.
It is a charming game series. I just get burned out on it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because the initial startup of you starting your own house and building it up and meeting the neighbors and, you know, getting the key pieces of furniture you want for that one room and getting the theme set up and all is really addictive. Truth be told, I had a 10-day World of Warcraft trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that sunk its claws deep into me, but I couldn't afford the monthly subscription. So I went out and bought Animal Crossing just so I could have some kind of overworld grind to scratch that itch. Terraforming things, knocking out trees so that you could plant what you want is not quite the same as shooting kobolds, but, you know, when you get down to it, the basic mechanic... Okay, anyway. What burns me out, though, is a lot of the furniture is really hard to come by or very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss your window of opportunity, that's pretty much it. And once you get your town in a position that you want, the upkeep becomes a bit of a bear. It becomes something that you have to log into daily and maintain. And that's not quite as much fun as the building and the restoration and the terraforming.
Yeah.
Aaliyah's got far more patience for it than I do, and her town looks amazing compared to mine. But I don't know. I enjoy it. If you've never played the series, I would recommend starting with New Leaf, which is on the 3DS, because that's the one that built off of all that came before, added the most new features. It had a huge content patch about a year ago, I think, which added a whole new feature to the town with the ability to get some of the rarer holiday items a little easier.
I think it added amiibo support too.
Yep, amiibo support where you can get a ton of fun stuff. It actually kind of undercut the Wii U game Amiibo Festival, which did very poorly from my understanding.
Yeah.
And the best part of it was a kind of survivalist island adventure, and you can unlock that on the 3DS with the amiibos.
Oh, okay.
So there's really no reason to get Amiibo Festival.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody wanted Amiibo Festival anyway.
No, just they all wanted the Isabelle Amiibo when you got down to it.
That's really all they wanted, yeah. They didn't want all those
Amiibos. Not Digby, just Isabelle.
Yeah, they didn't want all those other Amiibos that are still out there clogging up shelves for $2. It kind of makes me sad that they... I don't know. Nintendo really... kind of put all their eggs in one basket on that one, making that the third series of Amiibo. Like, oh, Animal Crossing, perfect. It's like, well, I don't know if Animal Crossing has the appeal you think it does.
I would love to just buy up all of them and do my own little Animal Crossing village, but you can't really do it when they're like 12, 15 bucks a pop.
Sure. But now they're like 2, 3, so you can do it now.
Maybe.
They're cheap now. Because nobody wanted them.
To grab Kix at the very least. Kix is a great character.
That's the thing. I don't know very much about Animal Crossing at all. I'm just like, I don't know. I've never really been all that interested in it. Just, I don't know.
It's a very comfy game.
That's what it, yeah, and I definitely see the appeal in a game where you just kind of do stuff. You know, I love truck simulator games where you just drive and it's just kind of relaxing and you don't really have to worry about too much.
Exactly.
It's kind of that same thing. So I like city builder games like SimCity and City Skylines. Those are fun and they're kind of in the similar vein, I think.
Yeah, in a sense.
In a sense, yeah. I'm thinking that Animal Crossing is a little bit more like The Sims than SimCity, but either way.
Yeah, I would say that.
A little bit more. Not the same, but, you know, in a similar vein. And our last question comes from Chartographer217. Okay, seriously now. Exactly whose idea was it to put Sagata Sanshiro in the Champions Arc? This person deserves a medal.
I will take that medal, thank you very much.
Okay, good. Take the medal and wear it proudly.
I wasn't sure we'd get away with that cameo, but we did. So, yay.
Yeah. I'm glad you did, because that's just one of the things that I love about the Champions Arc, is all the fun cameos and stuff that's going on that is just like, oh, man, Ian, you freaking nerd. you are some sort of Sega nerd.
The other Fighting Vipers character cameo, though, I can't remember the character's name, but she's represented as a boar and she fights Honey in one scene. That was entirely Diana Skelly.
Oh, yeah.
She came up with the idea. She came up with the design. She plugged it in there. I had kind of like a general note in there that Honey should be fighting somebody. It was a small scene. It was an incidental. So we wasn't meant to be anything huge. And she took it to the next level. So hats off to her. She gets that medal.
That's also another thing that I love about that arc is Diana Skelly. Pretty much just Diana Skelly. She's a wonderful artist. All right. Well, I think we're at the end of the Q&A, which puts us at the end of the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap up, I'm going to say thank you to every single patron who makes this show possible. You guys are amazing. Let's see if I can do it in one voice. Okay, thank you to Daniel H., Alex P., Zephyr Flame, Chris A., Damo, John B., Sam Cybercat, Mike B., Connell T., Samuel P., Justin G., Jennifer R., David C., Revan the Light, Diane W., Lisa M., Today's Passenger, Artendi M., Scruffy Matt, Lee H., K., James G., Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, A.E., Double, Taco, Elgato Comics, John M., Yes, Vardovich 9X, James K., Everything Helps, Adam D., and Ron!
Oh, you did it! Yes! Are you dead? Okay, you're still alive. Okay.
Just checking. A little dizzy, but I'm good.
Very nice, very nice, very nice. We need more patrons, so you can do that easier. That's how it works, right?
All right, while I catch my breath, Kyle, tell the fine people where they can find you.
All right, you can find me right here on the Bumblecast. But if that's not good enough for you, you can also find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. Or you can find me at kngi.org, where you can find MP3 downloads of the Bumblecast, along with many other shows, including my show, Nitro Game Injection, a video game music remix show that streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time at 8bitx.com.
And you can find me at bumbleking.com or on Twitter at IanFlingBKC, or usually every Friday with Kyle or just Kyle, or just me, when we do Bumblecast Gaming Live.
And we also, we try to stream on Twitch as much as we can throughout the week at twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming. Just recently, I did a quick hour-long stream of Rise of the Tomb Raider. So, you know, we can do random stuff like that. We'll just pop in there and play a game or two whenever we get the chance. And don't forget to also check out the Bumble Store at shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble Store, where we have things you can sell, or things you can buy, that we sell to you with our logo on them. So you can get yourself like a Bumble face mask. I don't think they sell those.
I don't think we have Bumble face masks, but we do have plenty of Bumble swag.
Indeed. Maybe a Bumble headband. I don't think we have that either.
I don't think they have that. There's a Bumble hat.
They need that too. They need that though.
Can
you get like a Bumble visor? So like a hat without the top on it? That'd be cool.
I don't think so.
I think they've gotten rid of those since it's not the 90s anymore, but I'm not sure.
I give it 10 years, it'll come back around.
It's fine. Yeah, well, 10 years? It's going to be more like 2, because the 90s are cool again. And it's really surprising, startling to me when I think about the 90s and realize, oh man, it's, they really were a lot like the 80s, weren't they?
In a sick, twisted sense, yeah.
Yeah, because we had a lot of, there was a lot of pink and like neon colors and stuff in the 90s, a lot more than I remember.
But since nothing really good came out of the aughts or the 10s, we'll just loop back around to like the 60s or 70s.
We'll probably have to. Yeah, I think so. Because what are we gonna get nostalgic for? Crappy old stupid phones that aren't smart at all?
A resurgence of grunge? I don't know.
Nobody wants that. Resurgence of grunge? That would be the 90s. Are you thinking resurgence of nu metal?
Maybe.
Well, if you watch wrestling, you'll know that nu metal has not really gone away. I got no problem with wrestling, actually. I find wrestling like really fascinating just as an outsider because I don't really watch it ever. But like reading about it and hearing about it from other people and all that stuff is just like, it's fascinating just what's happened in wrestling. It's weird. I don't know.
It is.
It's interesting.
I think I've told this story before, but I remember freshman year of college, my roommate and I made an agreement. He would watch Dragon Ball Z with me if I would watch WWE with him.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the year, we had decided that they're the same thing, just one has lasers.
Exactly. They really are. They really are. It's just weird. It's weird. It's like, wow. Huh. Anyway, that's it for this episode of the Bumblecast.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next episode for a special guest appearance.
Woo.
Until okay. Then, this has been Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, Kyle Krause, God of Bumblecast Gaming, Podcasting. Crap, I screwed up that outro. Never mind. Have a good night, everybody.
It's always a good time when Lee laughs in the background at you. I wasn't even sure if she was there. She's been real quiet.
Thor 3.
Hold on, Ian. Sorry. Give me just a minute here. You missing something?
My keys.
Oh. Did you check on the floor?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. Available as a pay what you want download.
Okay, there we go. Skype was saying, pick up the phone. And I said, I did. And I hear you and Skype's going, pick up the phone. I did.
Skype is slow on the uptake.